My name is Charlene Deal, and this is event number 704 of Thin Air 2019. No, I realize it's only first day. We've had an amazing first day. If this is your first event here, welcome. If this is your fourth or fifth time you've joined us today, thank you for being a really part of our crowd. I'm very excited about this evening. I'm really glad to be back to MTYP, our home away from home for the festival. So let's begin by giving a shout out to this great theater. Really, I'm just making nice because I want Eric to keep serving such beautiful sound work all week and light work and not turn the mic off. It's like that. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we're gathered on Treaty 1 territory. This is traditional land of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Ojibwe, Dakota, and Dene peoples in the homeland of the Métis Nation. I think that the whole purpose of, and maybe the magic of a writer's festival is we have a chance to gather together and listen to different voices, different stories, different realities, and begin to catch a glimpse of who one another might be and how we might become better neighbors. So this is an effort that we all make to become better at being treaty people. So it's an honor to be here. And especially, I'm still resonating from the event we just had at Odena, which is a truly fine place. And we've got this beautiful evening, and it's the start of 9 days of brilliant, beautiful storytelling. We are in for a treat tonight. As all of you know, you're probably very excited to have a chance to hear the amazing Shane Khoisan in person. And without further ado, because you all know how amazing he is, and we get to welcome here with a big Winnipeg welcome, Shane Khoisan.
Like, are you serious? I was like, I don't have time to explain irony to you. I don't, I have to go catch a flight. But it brings me to my first poem. All the poems I read tonight are going to be from this book here. It's called The Basement in My Attic. And I figure after that experience, I was like, man, we're just like totally forgetting how to be people to one another. And it reminded me of a little instruction manual I wrote, so this is called How to Be a Person. How to Be a Person, 1, find your voice. Know that not all languages contain words. Your voice could be music, it could be dance, it will be what expresses you most sincerely. Your voice is an art. If your heart is broken, make art with the pieces. 2, remember that you are an artist. Regardless of how constantly the world will try to drag it out of you, or how a real job will try to bury the part of you that communicates your feelings when language fails, you are an artist. Whether it is with food or building robots, you will know your medium the instant you realize how in love you are with what it brings out of you. 3, apologize. You will not always be right. You will not always be wrong. You will hopefully always be learning. Atonement is a sacrifice of pride. Explanation of why you did what you did or said what you said will not vindicate you. If the cost to heal someone is only your pride, then apologize and be grateful that you received peace at such a bargain. 4, forgive. Realize that some people are still learning. If forgiveness is not possible, then think of everything you have ever wanted to be forgiven for but weren't. Hold that uneasiness in your mind until you feel your desire for absolution becoming a wish. Realize you can grant this wish for others. If you are waiting for forgiveness, be prepared to wait. Be prepared to stand in the path of time and wither. Respect that forgiveness is difficult. Not all trespasses are equal, and not everyone will heal according to your schedule. 5, accept that farting is funny. Granted, not always appropriate and sometimes unpleasant, but if you cannot laugh, if you are more offended by a fart than by war, famine, political corruption, deforestation, racism, classism, the wrongfully imprisoned, the treatment of women, the foreclosing on homes while banks' debts are forgiven, if a fart offends you more than any of that, then you are not a person and cannot be helped. Join a cult. Have some Kool-Aid. 6. Know that love is a vulnerability, but not a weakness. Love is the volunteer in you that raises its hand and steps forward without needing to be rewarded. Love is a currency that functions in reverse because the only way to be wealthy with it is to give more of it away. 7, don't laugh to fit in. Laughter should be honest. If there is no sincerity in your joy, then your happiness will be a forgery that fools only yourself. 8, do not fear to be hated. But be cautious toward those inhabited by hate. You will be hated. Regardless of who you are, what you say, or what you do, you will be hated for your successes or your failures, for good looks or bad looks, for intelligence or stupidity. Hate is the child of the hater, nurtured by the beliefs it has fed. You often will have no control over what you are hated for. Know that antipathy becomes the master of its owner. Know that if you are going to be hated regardless of who you are, then be fearless enough to be who you want to be. Hate is no more eloquently articulated than in the poetry of the expression, not your fucking problem. 9, try. The tiniest dream that you try to make happen is worth more than the biggest dream you never attempt. 10, be savagely thankful. And continuously in awe of the power you possess. You are alive inside of a cosmos with a freedom that shines brightest in the dark. Choices. Your choices belong to you so intimately that they will never leave you. They, unlike the changing nature of love or the failing machinery of our bodies, will never abandon you to time. Good or bad, they will stay always. An antique that shows the future, who you were and what you stood for. Know that what you choose to stand for is what will inform you of what you've chosen to stand against, so stand. Let each foot crash land into what you believe and plant them there firmly in your convictions so they may take root in your life and stand. Thank you. I was looking for water and realized I don't have any water. I may die of thirst up here. Oh, yes, okay, I will do that. I'm going to read you, if I can find the beginning of it, okay. I'm going to read you a piece. I wrote this as, I'm sure guys probably more feel this than women, but I get really nervous when I have feelings for someone and I have to tell, oh, I like you, but it's like the words never come out. They're a chicken bone in the throat, and I'm just like, start hyperventilating, and then I wonder, why are they looking at me like I'm having a heart attack? And it's like, because I am. And I just can't get the words out. And I was like, one time I was with somebody, and I was like, this is it. I'm going to do it. Just do it. Just say it. And I was totally about to say it. And then she looked at me, and she was like, I like you. And I was like, fuck you. God damn it. Because then all you're relegated, all you can say back is, I like you too. And it just sounds like, meh. So I wrote this. Oh, thank you so much. There is a gravity in you so heavy, it begs me to wonder if other hands have experienced the same difficulty as mine. When my hands set down on the spaces you allow them, they feel compelled to never leave. There are magnets in the way I feel about you, like there is fruit in the jello. I like you too. I like you so too. I like that you keep your shoulder blade sharp enough to cut through the maybe knots that have kept me tangled up in hesitation. My spine is the bridge where my heart meditates on the difference between diving and falling. My pulse is the busy signal gravity gets when calling to collect payment for keeping my feet on the ground, because the butterflies in my stomach were just caterpillars before they met you. They did not begin rehearsing flight until they were sure you were the sky. I like you too. My laugh has been the overdue library book that I thought would never be returned. Believed all the pages had been torn out and burned to warm someone else's lonely nights, but you bring back my smile like you bring back hardcore to pillow fights. On the list of things I like, you rank above cowboys walking wiener dogs. Cowboys walking wiener dogs ranks very, very high. And yet you are somehow above it. You make me admit to joy. You make me confess to thee. I love it. I am as guilty of happiness as I am innocent of despair. You are the never-ending music that invites me to dance around the electric chair that's been begging me to take a seat. You are the video game cheat code that makes me run faster, jump farther, walk through walls and breathe fire. And when it feels as though I'm stuck, you slip chains around each tire to remind me that sometimes we have to dig into the dirt and make the path bend to the direction we choose. To live like we lost our nothing to lose back when we were still wondering if our everything to gain would be enough to explain why we risked it all. To carve scars in the shape of one another into each other like initials into trees. Please understand that when I say I like you too, I'm not just echoing words back to you. I'm celebrating the fact that you said these words to me at all. Because I can't recall a time when it didn't feel like my best guess was just another wrong answer waiting to happen. When I asked you what words you liked, you said context, because it changes everything. So let me bring you these long-stem possibilities, none of them written in stone, just sewn into whatever vase you provide, whatever context you put them in. Because I've been watching the way sunflowers blush in moonlight, and it reminds me of the radiance you use to slay my shadows of doubt. You shout into my silence like an orchestra detonating requiems in my sleep. You steep yourself like tea into this broken cup I keep locked behind a cabinet of bones. Ribs like thin tombstones marking a resting place for something I could swear I once buried there. I didn't count on you becoming the skeleton key that would open up these parts of me. Didn't think anyone would want to unearth all the silly string and crazy glue. But I grab the shovel and I dig up these parts of me for you because I like you too. I like that you splash around in the puddle of me and turn my stillness into chaos. You cross my mind like an ambulance crossing a city. All other considerations clear a path and stop to make way for the thought of you. I like you so too, it feels like an emergency. Like we are riding on the back of a flashing red comet, etching ourselves into the universe like a scratch of light against the smooth black finish of a night so never ending, all we can do is claw at it with our shine. I like you is the headline I want thrown against my doorstep every morning. Front page, big bold letters like a warning that no other news is important as this small declaration of war against loneliness. In this battle for joy, we are not often sent reinforcements. Self-doubt prints propaganda that says if we surrender, we will not be fired upon. But your presence in my life is the weapon I keep drawn against the oncoming bayonets of that lie. So make my aim true. Because I like that you like the way I like you. And I love that you like me like that too. It didn't work out. Not all romances always do. It's okay. We talk all the time. We're still really, really good friends. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work. And that's the thing. It's like you can hold on to, you know, that love until it becomes something you get angry about. And you can kill it if you hold on to it too tight. Or you can open up your hand a little bit and let it change and let it be something else. And that, to me, just seems like the better path. I'm so glad she's still in my life. She's somebody I trust and somebody I can talk to about multiple things, so it's valuable to me. But when I was writing that poem, a friend of mine who isn't really into poetry, he's like, what are you working on? I was like, oh, I'm writing a poem called I Like You Too. And he looked at me and he said, oh, I've had it up to here with Bono. And I was like, no. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah. So I wrote a follow-up poem. And this is called I Don't Like You Too. This was written, do you remember, like, must have been like 8 years ago, we all woke up one morning and looked at our phones and suddenly there was a U2 album on our phones that none of us asked for. And we're all like, bah! And Apple was like, it's a gift. And we're like, no! Not cool. And, you know, Bono and the Edge were all like, yeah. And we're like, That was the inspiration. Sometimes the inspiration isn't always deep, you know? All right. Your album appeared on my phone like a dick pic. It was unwanted. Dear Bono, I will gargle with the tears of your children. I will wear leather pants made from the skin of whoever loves you. I will dull the Edge as if he were a number two pencil versus me, a standardized high school exam. I will eat chicken wings and not clean my hands in the small bowl of lemon water they provide, and then I will reach out to you and leave my upside down thumbprint on your glasses. I will saw down a Joshua tree and carve a slingshot from its remains, which I will then use to pelt you with old cassette tapes of the Joshua tree and yell, your albums must be at least this good to make it onto this phone. And my friends, my beautiful, brilliant, sexy friends, ask me a beautifully brilliant, sexy question. The solution to my problem contained right there inside the query itself, like a squirt of poo baked into a Timbit. They ask, why not just delete it? But I say no. I tell them it is my therapy, that my almighty thumb is a righteous fist punching the skip button in the face. And when finally I caved to the clumsy seduction of hate, I put the entire album on repeat just so I can keep punching. Bono, I know it wasn't just you. I know that Apple was involved. So I will strangle you with the next chord Apple tries to sell me. Then hide your silly body where the streets have no name. Dear Apple, don't go thinking the bill is not coming to your table. You too, and by that I mean you in addition to them, them being the band you two, but you also will pay for this. And I do not accept Apple Pay. The next adapter you try to sell me will swiftly become your own very uncomfortable butt plug. At first it was cute. The iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, but then came the eye gouge. You blinded us with a retina display of your greed. If you're gonna charge me that much for a phone cord, it better be made from the guts of RoboCop. I'm gonna need it to survive some shit. When you build product designed to break, you strip the world of resources, innovator. Innovate yourself a business model that takes that kind of sustainability into account and smarten up. Of course, I say this, having written this entire piece on an iPhone, using the Notes app and listening to iTunes with your shitty ear pods that fall out of my head like common sense out of a Trump supporter. All of this, well, in the waiting room, waiting for a colonoscopy to be performed by a doctor who looks like he hates his job. I don't hate either of you. I once poured dish soap into a shot glass and convinced a friend it was cream de menthe. The point is, everyone does something that eventually makes them a target of criticism. So even with your brainstem resting squarely in my crosshairs, even with my finger on the trigger as jumpy as a kangaroo at a bandwagon parade, I say to you with all compassion, discovery can be a gift, but allow people to be drawn to the beauty that they seek out. Because when art is chosen for us, when culture is spoon-fed to the masses, it becomes propaganda. Do not be that. Because the only people who send unsolicited dick pics are the people trying to fuck you. A lot of the times I get asked about how I got started in writing, and really the way it started for me is I just didn't have anyone to talk to. I had things I wanted to say, I had things I've been waiting my whole life to say, but I didn't have anyone to say them to. And sometimes the things you've been waiting so long to say find their way to the page, and this piece is that. There were always words, even when there was no one there to teach me what they meant. Even when the ones I needed most bent themselves into hooks that got caught in my throat, I wrote down the ones I couldn't bring myself to say. Kept them polished and true for the someday that is finally here. I don't mean to dig up the past, just let me clear the cemetery out of my throat, because there's some things you should know. You should know that every word I ever wrote has been in rehearsal for the now that is finally upon us. I don't mean to put up a fuss about love. I just wonder, is there a plot of land in the territory of your heart for me? Is there a place where I can lay our regret to rest peacefully? You should know. As a child, I planted drops of blood into the ground like seeds, hoping I could grow your ghost and finally have a reason for your absence. Where were you? Who are you too busy being that seeing me was backburnered for so long that I eventually caught fire? That I became a spire of flame you were too scared to reach out to for fear of being burned in your absence? I learned a recipe for an inferno that turned everything it touched into ashes that refused to fall apart. Others called it stubbornness. I called it conviction. I rubbed words together, understanding that friction was the ingredient needed for the ember that would grow the blaze in my chest. I pressed my hands into the world and wondered if the mark I left would be big enough for you to finally notice me. We both made broken into a work of art we could not bring ourselves to look upon because we helped sculpt it. You gave me half this heart. But I'm the one who learned how to make it love. I'm the one attempting to shove my way to the front row to the concert of your apology just to leave a note at your feet that says you don't have to be sorry. All I want is to know your side of my story. Give me my origin. Because up until now, it's been lost in the fire I became anytime anyone ever asked where my name came from. When you tell them you don't know, the conversations go from hello to goodbye and the time it takes to make an excuse good enough to make walking away easy. You should know that existence has historically not been my favorite activity. It has not been my best subject. The things your absence made me feel became three dots I learned to connect out of order. So let's start with the second. The second thing I ever felt was ugly. The first thing I ever felt was unwanted. The third thing I ever felt was haunted by the belief that the first thing I felt was a belt around my neck that would never loosen. That the gruesome solitude of the hush between us would leave me hanging from this breaking branch of our family tree. Tell me how many graveyards make up the acreage of skeletons in our closet. And I'll tell you how words have become the composite artist I use while trying to draw a face for the missing person of our relationship. Tell me that the beginning of us is not the end of the world. That the python curled around your voice is dying. Tell me that the words in you have been trying to escape for decades and that there are parades of noise ready to march through the quiet that sprouted up between us like a mountain neither one of us believed we could climb. Tell me we can recycle clocks and stop wasting time. I'm done with the heartbreak of us. I've read the world, and there are parts that make me smile. Chapters like a sundial that can tell time at night. There are stories born in the dark who grow up knowing they have to make their own light. Magicians who practice sleight of heart so no one will know which life their love is in. It's right here. I know I'm not supposed to tell, but do you want to know how I did it? I hid it in the words we haven't said to one another yet. Laid it evenly across the alphabet so that each letter could support the long, heavy weight we've both been ready to let go for the better part of ages. I carved it into the pages I wear like skin, wrote hope across my body, hoping it would hold all of my red ink in. When there was no one, There were words. Words to plug the holes in my sinking suspicion that blame would only ever offer to sink us rather than keep us afloat. There were words that wrote themselves into rescue boats looking for survivors amid the wreckage of our story. Words became the diamonds I mined from a quarry of depression so fathomless a sea monster has been said to live in it. I know I shouldn't swim there, but I find things in its depths. I have found music in the way others volunteer to complete the unfinished architecture of my heart. Kindness in the shine that radiates from those who taught me to chart my escape from darkness. Bravery in a kiss laid upon me like grace stumbling into the long fall of love. Virtue in the kind of friendships that risk sailing with me in these waters. I have seen enough of doubt to know that it becomes the beast that slaughters trust and leaves wet shreds of dignity hanging from its greedy teeth. I planted gardens beneath my feet to grow my stride towards you. Kept an ocean behind my eyes, believing it could extinguish the flames I've been wearing and stop us both from burning. I am learning to reach into the dying womb of ugliness and pull beauty from the mausoleum it's been trying to become. Sometimes I find rescue in my own hands. Sometimes the pen moves as if the commands I give it sound more like requests, sound more like pleas. Like I am begging words to assume the shape of a love I cannot use them to explain. They do their best. Growing up without you, the machinery in my chest rusted out like a storm drain beneath a sky that would not stop raining. So here I am, chaining lightning to my thunder, standing under our family tree, hoping I can salvage your pulse with my electricity. When there was no one, and there was often no one, there were words. But none of them will ever echo as violently as the ones left unspoken. None of them will ever shake our hearts to broken quicker than the ones we never say. So I made words my friends, hoping that if I got to know them well enough, they would help me change our story. I'm sorry I can't rewrite our beginning, but there are better endings to be had. Growing up, I learned to love words. I'm told my first word was dad. When I was growing up, I didn't know a lot about my dad. I didn't know that my dad had been scooped up and taken to residential schools. I didn't know that he was dealing with all this trauma until, you know, my teens rolled around and my grandmother started talking to me about it. And it was a friend of mine, Paul Crawford, helped me reconnect with my dad. I think in this life, no matter what station you're at, you need friends. They're an absolute must-have commodity. And friends are weird in that we allow our friends to do terrible shit to us, and it's okay, because, you're my friend. One time I was down at the beach with my buddy Matt, and Matt stole a beer from his dad. So there we were, we were 13 years old, trading one beer back and forth. And absolutely, totally wondering, why do adults drink beer? It tasted the way I imagine shame tastes, just warm and skunky, just looked awful. And off in the distance, I see two cops, two RCMP on bikes. And so, Matt sees them too, but they're far enough away, they can't see what we're doing. Casually take the bottle, throw it into the bush. No problem, they have no idea. But yeah, they're coming towards us, and I haven't taken my eyes off of them. I can see they're coming up to us. And he pulls up, and he's like, what are you guys up to there, just hanging out on the edge of the wood? Yeah, shenaniganing. And I was like, no, we're just, we're playing. And at that age, playing was a legitimate thing. You could answer, I'm just playing. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, your friend took off in an awful hurry. And I look around, Matt's gunning it down the path as fast as he's like full on sprint going, just leaves me to fry like sizzling. I was like, what the hell? But you forgive your friends for those kinds of moments. You're kind of like, you look back on it, you're like, yeah. Because there's a trade in friendship. They're there for those other moments, you know? And so I wanted to write a piece that celebrated that, and so I wrote this. This piece is called Fish. Not that you ever do, but if you ever wonder, your friendship is a hook that you cast into an ocean where I practice drowning. Your love is a lure so brilliant it makes me bite into the pain. You make the hurt worth enduring. You bring me to the surface and my gills blossom like flowers surrendering to new atmosphere. If it looks like I'm trying to breathe, it's because I'm suffocating on the oxygen you provide. A yawn can look like a scream with the volume turned down. So let my choking on this air look like laughter, because you sure make it feel that way. You are funny. Funny like the fact that you have a self-diagnosed condition that you call back flatulence. The first time I witnessed it, I was struck apart into laughter by an orgasm of joy so ferocious, it must have looked like a Care Bear after being gassed up at the dentist's office. You are funny like the fact that you add your own sound effects to the world around you. When the click of a button is not enough, you add boink. I do my best not to wonder what mystifying carnival of noises your lovers must walk through. What perplexing squeals make up the bouquet of your intimacies. You are funny like the fact that you thought Vegas would be a good idea. To go partying amid the never-ending onslaught of blinking lights, despite the fact that you have epilepsy. Funny as hell. But if I ever lost you in that way, or any other, I would feel the departure of your gravity in my life. I would feel the ocean rise up around mountains as if its hunger was promoted to the head of the starvation department. You would be as mist as moonlight. You would fuck with the tides. I would be devastated if one day the lure of you stopped showing up in my ocean. If the beacon that gives me comfort suddenly stopped flashing and the darkness of the water around me thickened into a presence more difficult to swim through. Because you are the someone who annoys me with joy until I wave a white flag to it. You are the reservoir I draw from when life requires strength, which is just a little over all the time. You accept the weirdness in me like I am giving you a snow globe. You don't know where the fuck you're gonna put it, but you know that I've been put in junk drawers before. You know that I've been neighbors with orphan beams of staples that want nothing more than to keep it together, whatever it happens to be, so you make space for me in your life. You keep me on your kitchen table. Granted, I'm still surrounded by junk, but we often hold strange communion there, in the heart of your peculiar palace. We play racquetball with ideas, and we do not go easy. Even on the nights when your back flatulence is acting up, we get right into the bruises of it. We open the wound as if unpacking a delicacy, and we go through it together, learning to eat our pain with these strange utensils we call hearts. There are parts of us that even the greedy hands of clocks cannot touch. Even the circadian nature of decay can only serve to amplify its shine. My memories of you are stored in the cellar of my attic like a vintage wine. Old quilts of fine dust camouflage the gleam beneath, but a light white polishes away the time, and the glass begins to look like a jewel I cannot bring myself to part with. You are priceless. The fangs of temptation will be stopped at the gates of how much you mean to me. I will never gamble with the ruby in your chest. You are my friend. You are valued so far beyond appraisal that the concept of any other kind of wealth becomes gibberish to me. And when you hurt, I want to touch the part of you that aches. Boink. Because when my despair becomes a leviathan, when the small hooks won't suffice and breath turns to dread, the instant I become a sunken ship, you raise me from ruin. You cast anchors instead. Thank you. What time are we at? How much time do we have left? 9:07. So I don't know what the, I don't know how much time we have. 1 minute? Jesus. 23? Okay, so I got some time. There are pieces that I don't have in my iPad, pieces that never make it as performance pieces or pieces that I perform while I'm on tour. I'd like to read some of those to you, if that's cool. I rarely get a chance to, so, you know. This piece is called Moving Day. It's about that same relationship, that same failed relationship that I told you about earlier. Because in the beginning, fuck, it was beautiful. It still is beautiful. So I'm going to read this because she's awesome. Moving Day. There are so many flights of stairs that lead up towards your heart. I get breathless just thinking about having to climb them all. Others in the lobby are waiting for you to install an elevator. They argue about their place in line, all insisting they were first. My luggage hits the first step. Beneath me, the noise blooms like a clumsy flower, and they all turn their heads toward me. For a moment, they are silent. And then laughter stampedes from their lungs the instant they recognize my preposterously imminent failure. They are certain I won't succeed, and perhaps I won't. But I can find no good reason to tell them that none of the baggage they are carrying with them will fit into that elevator they're all waiting for. So I save my breath and listen to the next flower loudly take its place in the bouquet as I pull the heavy luggage of my heart up the next step toward yours. Thanks. I think in the world we've gotten to a place where it's like people stop educating themselves. To me, education always seemed like a lifelong pursuit. You're curious about something, you go learn about it, you go figure out what it is, and that way, you know, it becomes more of a part of your life. And somewhere along the way, I think we just got into the habit of, or maybe not even the habit, maybe the fact that we just don't have time anymore. We work so long, we do so much. There's no time for us to pursue the things that pique our curiosity, the things that inspire us, the things that motivate us to go to these new places. And so I wanted to speak to that, and I wrote this piece. This is called The Sum of It Squared. To discover the thing you're brilliant at, you first have to endure discovering all of the things you're average at. In discovering this, you will discover something about yourself. Not all of it will be good, but some of it will be wonderful. I can promise no more than some of it, because there will be a contrast. Some of it will be difficult. You will not be prepared for some of it. There will be lessons both sharp and unforgiving. Letter grades will become the promises of those upon whom you cannot rely. Meaningless. You will not receive an F at falling in love, though you yet may fail at loving the one you fall for. You will not receive an A+ at doubting yourself, though you will doubt yourself greatly. The test you will come to face will pit you against needles of terrible consequence. The night sky will not blaze with the light of gold stars for your achievements. You will be awarded nothing for your survival. Pass-fail will depend on how you view the world. If money is everything to you, but you have only a little, you may come to regard your life as a failure. But wealth comes in different forms. The form it becomes for you will depend on what you value. If you prize knowledge but have only a library card, you will be rich in a different way. Your treasures will be dug from pages of thought. Chapters of imagination, wisdom, illumination will open to you like a friend. Curiosity will become the trail you follow deeper into yourself and the world. Your mind is an open hand ready to grasp whatever proficiency you reach for. You are free to pursue whatever knowledge you wish. If an answer exists, it will be yours to find. Important to note, there will not always be answers. There will be times when confusion falls all around you, descending in slow motion like shattered glass raining wounds into your confidence. You may at times feel abandoned by your own instincts. The needle of your moral compass spinning directionless as the polarities of joy and despair change their minds about beliefs once held firm. Some of your questions will move you beyond the dimensions of true or false. True, you will have multiple choices. False, every choice you make will lead to the doorstep of the outcome you desire. There will be no teacher's copy of the book of life, No secret chapter at the back indexing solutions to the problems you face, yet there will be rewards unexpected and dazzling. In the times most troubling to you, laughter will become a fortune you pull from your own shadow like candlelight from a womb of dark anguish. Friendship will become a jewel sparkling against the intolerable might of isolation, a shining reminder that you need never build walls to keep trust at bay. Some of it will be brilliant. Some of it will spill from street lamps at night as if weeping in incandescence. Some of it will pool at your feet into a reservoir of valor meant to rescue you from the inevitable eclipses of regret. There will be regret. You will hurt others. Whether by accident or act of will, your simply being will cause pain. You will not be able to mend all of the scars you birth. You may not care. But be cognizant that while the present may never say it to your face, history will not shy to say it behind your back. You are, in the end, accountable for what you create. In composing fear, you will sculpt hate. In forging inspiration, you will author hope. Each choice will present you with consequence or reward. From this point on, the most important questions you will be asked are the ones you ask yourself. Your education begins with deciding what you wish to discover. In discovering this, you will discover something about yourself. Not all of it will be good. There will be days of empty that march through you like soldiers of diffidence cheering on the surrender of your gallantry. The glory of this pain will exist in the fact that it is temporary, that whatever sorrow is aching to receive you, I promise you no more than some of it. Some of it too will be wonderful. I get all kinds of surprises in my life, things that I never really expect to happen, because to me, I'm always just kind of in my own head. And imagination is a great place to live, but it rarely grounds you. And a while ago, I got a request out of the blue. I got a request from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. There was a young girl who wanted to meet me. That was her wish. And it was such a... I couldn't believe it. I was like, all I wanted to do was write her and be like, don't waste your wish on me. You can have anything. I'm like, your problem is imagination. But I was so taken aback by having been asked that, that I ended up writing this piece. So this is for Jada. This is called Wish. I stopped believing in magic when a magician showed me how magic was done. I stopped making wishes when I noticed none of them came true. Granted, the wishes I made were for ridiculous things. I once wished my hamster was an octopus. I wished my bullies were beanbag chairs that I could sit on. And then they could wish that they had treated me better so they wouldn't have to keep trying to make polite conversation with my ass. I wished for the extinction of all ropes so I would never be forced to climb another one in gym class. I wished for a toll charge between our brains and our mouths, hoping it would encourage people to think before they spoke, because most of the time we say things we wish we hadn't. I wished for more wishes, because everybody does that. Everybody wants a loophole. And the day I got stuck in a tree with no one around to help me down, I wished I could speak to trees. Maybe that one came true. Maybe I worded it poorly. I mean, no one is actually stopping me from speaking to trees. So maybe it's true. Maybe it's just that trees don't have much to say. Maybe trees want me to figure things out for myself. Maybe they stay quiet to give a balance to all this noise we're so busy making, where you can't hear one another wish. Wish we could catch our breath like fireflies, ask them to light the way through these tangled nights we sometimes find ourselves in. We don't always know where we're going, but look at all this shine we're making. Like stars in full dress rehearsal, knowing The light is just a costume, and someday we're going to have to be even brighter. We're going to have to remind the sun it's okay to feel small in a universe this big. It kind of makes the light more precious. Being tiny doesn't dull the sparkle we sharpen against desire. Our nature is to want. And a wish is just want focused through a kaleidoscope of lenses meant to tame the frenzy in our thirst. We're so thirsty. Like there are deserts in our throat, where even cactuses see mirages of lemonade stands in the distance. Like there's rust in our bellies from all the oceans we drank already. Everybody has something to want. For the lonely, it's to be loved. For the tired, it's to be sleeping. For the homeless, it's a home. For the wealthy, it's just more. And for the poor, it's just some. And I'm no different. From those I've hurt, I want forgiveness. From the pain I feel, I want relief. The alchemy is complicated, but there are ways to turn ourselves into gold. Until then, I wear my tarnish like a suit that doesn't fit. The patina of my flaws tucked into pants so tight, it feels like they'll rip if I keep breathing. We're so busy wanting for ourselves that it escapes our memory to want for others. We lost the abracadabra in our hope. We started to assume that the magic was just hocus pocus. I want to be worth your hocus pocus. Getting to be part of your wish makes wishes real again. So thank you for the wands in your bones. Thank you for aiming your magic at my skepticism, for reaching into my amnesia with both hands and pulling out the believer I forgot was still in there. I wish people thought more about what they can make come true for others. Maybe that one comes true. Maybe I worded it poorly. I mean, nothing is actually stopping us from becoming one another's magic. Thank you. I bookmarked this book with two dedicated poems. The first poem in the book is I wrote the day Leonard Cohen passed away. And the last poem in the book I wrote the day Gord Downie passed away. I'll read you the last poem. This is called Gift Shop. There's going to be a scar born on top of the day you leave us. It's what I've learned about hurt. It is a gift shop that we linger in. Each wound a souvenir that cost us something. We pay for our scars, and this one's gonna hurt. Because there have been nights we have worn your music like a stitch over an open vein, like a cast over the ribs we broke from beating our chest, thinking we could stop our hearts from feeling this. We brace for the scar we will inherit from your departure. Selfishly, we flood into the gift shop. We flip past the many millions of postcards meant to express the sentiment, miss you so much, wish you were here. We shuffle through them all, just looking for the one among them that says, thank you so much, wish you could stay. So I've either got time, I can do one of two things. I can take some questions from you guys, we can have a little conversation, or I can do one more poem, and then I'll go over there, and hopefully you guys will buy books, because poetry. So does anybody have any questions or anything they want to ask, or? Nope, okay, good, see ya. You just want to hear more? Too bad, you're going to go deaf. That was terrible. Oh my God. Thank you. I'll happily read more. I'm trying to decide what to leave you guys with. Also, I just want to say, I think my cousin made it out tonight. Casey, are you here? Nope. Oh, hey. Hello. Good to see you. My cousin just moved to Winnipeg from Yellowknife, and he's an amazing artist, multidisciplinary artist. Seek out his work. He's going to blow you away, and you guys are so lucky to have him. You have no idea. So welcome. I hope you're having a good time so far, man. Okay, I'll leave you guys with this piece. And thank you all so much, and thank you to Thin Air and the Winnipeg Writers Festival. I had a really great day today. I'm feeling good about my man boobies. you know, it's all right. It's okay. Sometimes you just got to touch them. I do embarrassing things all the time. I went to a hardware store one time and matched up my nipples on the paint chart. Just to see. Because sometimes you need a whole room of your nipples. You know, they're dusty rows. I'm going to leave you with this piece because I think it's... I'm really trying to move forward. I've really been stuck in grief this last year and a half, I guess. Losing my grandmother was really hard. She was my person, the person I trusted more than anyone else. And it's a lot like walking down a dark street and you've got street lamps all above you so you can see where you're going. And then all of a sudden those lights go out. And you stop, and you didn't expect that loneliness to come at you so hard, and you didn't realize how big of a piece they were in your life. So I want to move on. I need to. I can't dwell in this place any longer. But it's hard. It's a challenge. But we all go through those things, don't we? So hopefully this will help bolster your spirits for whatever challenge you're facing. Thank you guys so much. If you think it will be easy, if you think the path will be laid out before you, or that the trail will have previously been blazed, all obstacles cleared, every footstep pioneered by those who have gone before you. If you think every barricade will have been dismantled, or that every wall will have been removed, if you think pressing your hands under the wet cement of a foundation will have proved to the world you have left your mark upon it, if you think the grit under your fingernails is evidence that you have done enough, or that your rough and calloused hands offer sufficient testimony that you have earned rest, if you think the test will be anything less than an essay question aimed at unearthing the answer of how much your heart can bear, you will be disappointed. It will require more than that. There will be no welcome mat waiting to greet you at the foot of this mountain, no medal to pin upon your chest when this is done. You will have won nothing by crossing this finish line. It exists only to task you with discovering how much deeper you can go. It will insist that you drill past the I don't know that has stood stubbornly in your way since the instant you first wondered if you could. It will burden you with the charge of bringing to the surface an understanding of the misunderstood, the excavation of an answer to the question, what now? How do you keep going in a world where the hellos are outweighed by the goodbyes? How do you train yourself to know that you have to battle through the fall if you ever expect to rise? You have to accept the fact that the size of the mountain in front of you is secondary to the fact that there is a mountain in your way. What are you going to do? You don't need a finish line to remind you that the way forward exists because of the work you put in forging the path behind you. Effort isn't weighed on scales. There will be times when the last breath in your lungs must volunteer to become the wind in your sails, because who else is going to do it? Forward, faster than full speed toward the colossus of uncertainty that's been laying bricks in your throat to make room for the quiet imposter sent to replace your roar. Your strength is not diminished because others think your struggle is futile. Every time you broke, You learn to reconcile the pieces and build a better self using what you could salvage from the ruins of your slaughter. Your alma mater was a school of thought where the lessons were taught in reverse. Test first, instruction later. It was a classroom dedicated to the teaching of what can be learned from your failure. The answers were never meant to be easy. You've always known it. You don't borrow the conviction it takes to make yourself practice the impossible. You own it. The heaviest thing you will ever have to lift are your own spirits. They will at times be weighted down with the terrible gravity that is doubt. They will at times to refuse to man the lighthouse meant to steer you clear from disaster. You will never master being whole without first knowing that some of the pieces we lose stay lost. And sometimes the cost of moving forward is having to leave behind that part of yourself and learn to exist without it, to face down whatever mountain is in your way, but then to do what you're going to do about it. Thank you, guys.
Shane's taller than I am. My name is Bruce Semeca. I am not Charlene Deal. I know she started the evening, and then I'm finishing the evening. Running a writer's festival is kind of like tag team wrestling, and Charlene and I had to tag off. She's dealing with something. So I'm just here, and it's my privilege. I get to say, Shane, thank you so much. Shane, thank you so much for helping us kick off the first day of Thin Air. And I think we're just so lucky to have Shane with us tonight. I'm just so happy about that. Anyway, we have stuff going on all week. If you like fiction and nonfiction, we've got poetry. Does anyone here like poetry? I don't know. I'm just total random guess. I don't know. We've got a whole poetry bash of stuff going on Tuesday night. Fiction, nonfiction, McNally Robinson, library downtown, schools, MTYP. Pick up a program if you don't have one. I will personally give you one if you want me to. And I think we have books for sale. I'm pretty sure we do, of Shane's books. And maybe he would say hello to you after you're done. Anyway, thank you so much. And again, thanks, Shane. One more thing I have to do. There's a door prize, right? Right? Is Alexa Rosentretter here? Is there an Alexa? Yes. Come talk to me. I'm your new best friend.